Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my next guest is an award-winning actor who's playing Professor Henry Higgins on stage in the production of My Fair Lady at the Lyric, running through May 21st. Richard E. Grant isn't a stranger to the stage. He's actually reprising his role of Henry Higgins from a 2008 production. The musical made its Broadway debut in 1956, and a few years later was made into the classic film starring Audrey Hepburn in the role of Eliza Doolittle. It's a story of a high-society British professor who takes a lowly Cockney-accented flower girl and, through a bet, teaches her up and passes her as a refined, high-class British lady. It's a show that's about perception, transformations, and morality. Richard E. Grant has made his name on the silver screen with movies like Whitnail and I, L.A. Story, Bram Stoker's Dracula, that's just to name a few. And most recently, he played the villain Dr. Xander Rice in the X-Men movie Logan. But tonight, it's all about Henry Higgins and a little Eliza Doolittle. In studio, Richard E. Grant, my guest at the big table. Richard, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you very
much. I've been a fan of yours for a long time.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk about, this is, like I said, it's a reprisal for you. This is the second time through. What attracted you to doing My Fair Lady again?
I had done it at the Sydney Opera 10 years ago with a completely different cast and different production. So the opportunity, when it came up and they said, I got the offer from the Lyric Chicago to do it again, I thought, well, it's such an amazing story and such a great role. Why not have another stab at it? And I went to see Glenn Close in Sunset Boulevard on Broadway 2 months ago, and I was doing a movie with Melissa McCarthy in New York, and I asked her what it was like to revisit a role, because she had done Sunset Boulevard 20 years ago. Wow. And she said, your experience, your life experience, and the advantage of having done it before means that you have a much richer experience the second time around.
Yeah,
and there's less fear.
Yeah, and I was going to say, as a movie actor, primarily, movies and television, yeah. You don't necessarily come back to a role unless it's a sequel, a different script.
Exactly.
So there is something very unique as an actor to go back into the same role.
Yeah, and what's made this such a hugely enjoyable experience for me is playing opposite Lisa O'Hara. I think it's absolutely wonderful.
She's
as
great,
Eliza
yeah.
Doolittle. She just has the acting chops. She sings, she dances like a dream. So, it's very easy to, against Higgins's will, to fall in love with her on a daily basis playing this part. So all hands to Lisa.
I read this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but that in 2008, My Fair Lady was your first musical production.
It was, yeah.
So that's amazing to me for what's a distinguished career that you've done both on stage and screen. The idea that this is your first musical, was it just that you're not a singer or you're not a dancer? What was it that first kept you out, and what was it about My Fair Lady that got you in?
Well, the thing is that I think that actors, unless you identify yourself as somebody who can sing and dance, people don't naturally think of you, oh, well, that person can do that. So when I was asked to do this in Sydney, I thought, oh, well, I have a go. And the fact that it was written for Rex Harrison, the man who created mm-hmm. this role in the original musical in 1956, he had, I think, an 8-note singing range. And so they geared it entirely to him. And because he's a phonetics teacher, they came up with this Springgesicht or whatever it's called, where you sort of speak sing the things until right. you get to I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face, which is the end of the story, in which then logically he does begin to sing because his true emotions come out.
Yeah.
So legitimately it's not really a Broadway singing role in the traditional sense.
Right.
It's not Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof.
But, there's something about it. I mean, it's, to see the show, especially here in Chicago with the Lyric, to see The Rain in Spain, and mm-hmm. to all these songs that we know and may not remember that they're from My Fair Lady, and then the song comes on. Mm-hmm. There is this way that you say, this is a different kind of musical, and the way there is a lot of talk. It's a sing-songy, it's different than the orchestra's going to pick up now, and we're going to do this 4-minute song, and we'll come back to the story.
Exactly. I think that essentially, because it was based on George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion play, and then Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe wrote extraordinary music and very, very witty and perceptive lyrics to go with that. They have extended or made good on what is actually going on in the play. So it's not anything like a contemporary musical where I went to see Hamilton on my night off and there's almost not a single spoken line. Everything is rapped or mm-hmm. it's continuous music.
Right.
So it's the opposite of that. you know, and a different experience.
This character, what is it? I mean, because, you know, Professor Higgins is a famous character, as you mentioned, Rex Harrison, this mm-hmm. concept that many people know, not only from the stage, but from the movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, what do you have to do when playing a character that's so iconic, that people know? They know that relationship. They know Henry Higgins. They know Eliza Doolittle. As an actor, what do you have to do? Do you have to differentiate it or to honor it?
Oh, that's a great question. The first thing I thought was, if they've offered it to me, I think the worst route or route that you can take is to go down trying to do a poor man's version imitation of Rex Harrison, because you can't succeed, because there was only one Rex Harrison, and he was a great misogynist, I think, in real life. He's married many times and was appalling to women and appalling to all the Elizas that he worked with on the last tour he did in the States when he was 70 years old. And I know this, you know, it's all on record, so I'm not speaking out of turn. So instinctively, obviously, I went back to what Alan J. Lerner and George Bernard Shaw had described this character, and they said, you know, he's a very impulsive, he's like a boy man who is almost stuck in adolescence, that he approaches everything scientifically but has no real connection or understanding of other people's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So he's almost like a teenager in a man's body. And when all the science and the phonetics training is put to one side and he has to deal emotionally with Eliza, who has transformed under his tutelage, then he's completely at a loss and tongue-tied about what to do. So that makes it a much more interesting journey to follow that. Otherwise, I think you end up inevitably with an upper-class English bully who is basically a misogynist, and you think, well, why would Eliza put up with him for more than 2 nanoseconds?
Right.
And I think that this way round, you have a way into who this person is and why he's like he is, and why his mother treats him almost like a little boy. Of course, you know, he's a middle-aged, or in my case, older man. So, you know, that's what I went for.
Yeah, it's.
But of course, you can annoy people for that.
And, well, you know. I mean, and I want to take a break so we can stay on time tonight, because there's a lot of great themes in here. And I kind of mentioned the idea of transformations and morality, but there's this sort of yin and yang when it comes to cruelness and kindness in this play or in this mm-hmm. musical, and the way that you play Henry Higgins and how it all folds out. Let's talk more about that. Richard E. Grant is my guest. He, of course, the award-winning actor. Latest we saw him as Dr. Xander Wright in the X-Men movie Logan. He's starring as Professor Henry Higgins on stage at the Lyric in My Fair Lady, running through May 21st. We'll take a break. We'll come back more with Richard E. Grant here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the Big Table, Richard E. Grant, the great actor. I got to say, as a kid.
The great Justin Kaufman.
The L.A. Story was one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, thank you very much.
You were so good in it.
Thank you.
What's that clanging? Oh, my dang testicles. That's the line. Anyway.
Steve Martin's dialogue.
Steve Martin.
He takes the credit.
He's in town playing Professor Henry Higgins in the production My Fair Lady at the Lyric, running through May 21st. You know, it's an interesting role. We were just talking before the break about Henry Higgins, because, yeah, I mean, you could, just on paper, you could say, okay, he's just a misogynist who really wants to teach this lowly woman how to speak right, how to act right, manners and everything to pass her off as high society and win a bet. And in that, you know, there's a lot of these threads that are really on the borderline. Even now, I mean, this is a 1956 play, but looking to 2017, they come across as cruel. I mean, there's cruelty to it. How do you see that balance between cruel and kindness? Because I know that it plays out, and that's part of the evolution of this musical.
I think that what is ameliorating about Higgins, from my point of view of playing him, is that he, as he states quite a few times in the play, he treats everybody the same, whether they're a duchess or a chambermaid or a flower-selling woman who's living on the curbstone. So his argument is that as long as you are true to yourself and you treat everybody the same, then you can't really be accused of being an upper-class bully or classist or sexist or any of those things. You know, I don't think you can really buy that. It's his way of saying, I'm giving myself license to do this. And he's tripped up by that by the end. But I think that what he absolutely believes in is that you can take somebody and by changing the way that they speak and therefore upping their social standing, you open up a possibility for them to have a different kind of career and a better quality of life than if they stay speaking in the blue collar accent that she has. So it's a very idealistic notion that Higgins has.
It's a tremendous work. you know, the musical and the thread, because you'll watch and there'll be a couple songs in there that are about, oh, women, you know, and then at the end, you know, as you're watching watching the musical, you're like, wow, this is really cruel in 2017 for something that was written in 1956. Mm-hmm. But it understands its cruelty, and the twist in the story is, you know, that Henry Higgins has to understand that kindness goes a long way, and if he would do that, he might actually get what he wants.
Exactly.
But it's interesting because with those songs, I mean, there's a song towards the end like, why can't women be like a man? There's mm-hmm. there's a whimsical nature to it. There's a charming nature to it, and you can tell when it was written. The audience that I saw with was a bunch of high school kids, and the high school kids, when there's the big scene at the end where, you know, Henry Higgins and Eliza Doolittle have it out, and Eliza says, "I'm out." They see Henry Higgins as a villain.
Yeah,
they clapped. They almost stood up. They got so excited. They're like, "Yeah!"
They applauded. Yeah.
Do you notice a difference in the way that the text and the play or the musical plays in 2017 than it may have played in 1950s?
Yeah, definitely. And your brilliant description of what happened this afternoon is something that we've only been doing it since Friday night, so a few performances with a much more mature audience. But to hear that response from people who are under the age of 20 saying they're not putting up with the misogyny, that she as an emancipated woman needs to kick him up the butt. That was absolutely visceral, and you could feel it throughout. And so that was... I was thrilled by that. I thought that was absolutely fantastic.
There's a lot. I mean, there's something great about, and there's a couple pieces of dialogue in this musical about morality mm-hmm. and the idea of, through a bet to your character and Pickering, both deciding, you know, let's take someone up from the street level and let's see if we can transform them. This will be fun. The morality of the whole concept. And there's this, it seems to be a through line throughout the play. Do you notice that? Do you notice that a secondary thought about what My Fair Lady is really about?
Absolutely, because it was George Bernard Shaw's complete socialist conviction that every man and every woman should have equal opportunities. And by having his main character be the speech teacher, even when Alfred P. Doolittle, her father, who's a dustman, Eliza's father, comes in, within 5 minutes of hearing his take on not being able to afford living a moral life and being legally married mm-hmm. to Eliza's mother, Higgins immediately says, if we took this man in hand for 3 months, he could choose between a seat in the government or he could be, you know, a minister in the church. So he's always scientifically seeing that there is some way that by transforming somebody's speech, you increase their social prospects.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's almost like the American dream.
It is. And I guess what I'm getting at is that the idea that this musical is over 60 years old. And the threads that it goes after, the inequality, the idea of morality about how we all should be given the same opportunities, mm-hmm. just the way we treat each other, misogyny and sex, they ring true today. I mean, there's not much different from 60, whatever that is, 61 years ago.
I think that's true. But what isn't so palatable about Henry Higgins is that he believes that everybody has to speak the way he speaks, and that will increase your chances. So almost the reverse has happened in England now, where almost everybody doing what you do, Justin, who works in broadcasting or in the media, if you speak like I do, that will be an impediment to your getting ahead. Whereas if you have a regional accent or a much stronger ethnic accent.
So it's flipped.
It's flipped.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's interesting, too, because just in the going through your life story, I mean, you came from...
I grew up in Swaziland.
Yeah, Swaziland.
In Southeast Africa.
But the idea of... when you did come to England, you had a different type of accent than that was normal. And you had to assimilate or have to deal with a lot of the threads that are in this musical.
Exactly, yeah. So transforming how you are or how you speak or how you present yourself is, in essence, what the play is about. And so the journey that Eliza goes on from being selling literally flowers in the most low-down job outside an opera house when it's freezing cold to rich opera goers, and then being mistaken for a Hungarian princess at a ball 6 months later is about as big a journey as you could go in a short space of time. Then, of course, you know, she rightfully says, what have you left me fit for? And Higgins hasn't really taken that on board, because he almost had like a teenage fantasy. You know, you take one person, you transform them to something else, and then it's like, well, you know, carry on, do it yourself. He hasn't thought through that section.
As an actor, as someone who, you know, you look at your credits and there's so many different television programs and films and stage work, do you get to a point where you want to find work that resonates with you personally, that there are some tenets in the work that have to do with your personal story or things that you've gone through? Or is it still like, hey, man, if I can get that Wendy's commercial, I'll take it?
It's probably, yeah, a bit of the Wendy's commercial, and if there's a song to go with it, yeah, I'll grab it. You know, the very nature of actors' careers, I think, I can remember Judi Dench, I played her son in a movie 100 years ago, and I said, what is the most powerful thing that you have as an actor? She said the word no. That if you're offered the exact same kind of role each time, that is the only power you really have, is to say, I won't do that. I won't keep repeating myself. So, you know, hopefully, you know, it's a bit like blotting paper. You hope that somebody else is going to go, well, we're going to have you play somebody who's a bit like Justin Kaufman today. Okay, yeah, I'll do that. See. Okay, I'll grow a beard.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll keep smiling, and I'll be rude to the ushers in the theater.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
That's my life in a nutshell. Richard E. Grant is my guest. The award-winning actor is on stage as Professor Henry Higgins. My Fair Lady at the Lyric, running through May 21st. Let's take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. Richard E. Grant at the big table tonight. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Richard E. Grant. He's playing Professor Henry Higgins on stage at the Lyric Opera, My Fair Lady, through May 21st. It's great to have you in Chicago.
How often do you
get through Chicago? I mean, is this a place that you've performed in before?
I'd never been to really? Chicago, Justin. Yeah, I'd worked in various other cities and filmed on location in parts of the country, but I'd never been to Chicago before. So having grown up on Some Like It Hot and the Al Capone legend and all of that, I sort of had an idea that Chicago is a black and white city with gangsters. So I now know that it's not. And apparently, you know, according to Frank Sinatra, on State Street, that great street.
Right.
I just want to say, they do things they don't do on Broadway and all that stuff.
Right, you got it.
So, yeah.
He came here, he saw State Street's under construction. You're like, no, this is not what I thought. You know, one of the things we were talking about with My Fair Lady, and it's so interesting the way that new audiences, younger generations, take the show, is this idea of, I know Professor Henry Higgins, and I think, yeah, I guess he's a great hero, anti-hero, villain, charmer, everything wrapped into one. Like, he's the great star power of Broadway. Like, this is a great role where there's a lot of complexities to him. But there is this idea with the new generation that he's a villain. Yeah. There's a villain aspect. Do you see that? I mean, do you delight in the idea? Because you've played villains in your career. I mean, just in Logan, you were the big villain.
Yeah.
Do you bring that out in Henry Higgins?
Well, I think that, you know, there is such a tradition now in the last, I don't know, probably 80 years of having a British actor playing a villain and things, because somehow in the politically correct era that we're in, if you have somebody of another ethnicity,
right,
people take umbrage,
right,
and, you know, people get up in arms. But somehow if you go for the people that, you know, colonized you a few centuries ago, if you slag the Brits off, especially the upper classes, it's just,
do you find yourself being typecasted at all? I mean, did they go, oh, you know, it'd be great for this, Richard E. Grant. Let's get Richard in here.
Well,
to play villains.
Yes, probably. Yes, exactly. Yeah. But this afternoon's performance that you saw with all the school students,
yeah,
that was definitely a level of villainy that we had heretofore not quite experienced in quite the same way with a more mature audience. So I don't know whether that makes you an infantile young man, Justin, or just an old guy crocking about amongst the youngsters. I don't know. You did boo.
I booed,
okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
No, but I do think that there's something. I mean, you hit on it, and I read about that too. I think you said that in Vogue as well, the idea that for whatever reason political correctness has passed up British actors, you could play the villains. And do you find yourself being offered parts like that? Do you find yourself, you know, in a sense, people always coming back saying, oh, you play a great villain? Because you were a great villain in Logan. I mean,
thank you. Well, I think that what it comes down to is the very nature of the way that English or upper-class English or received pronunciation English, which I'm supposed to be an example of, means that you can sound very easily entitled and self-important and self-assured in a way that you may not in real life be, but you give that impression. So that, I suppose, that British tradition that came out of the British Empire over 200 years of maintaining a stiff upper lip and ruling the world, that hangover of that still has some kind of, I don't know, shadow in the way that people perceive you. I think that that gives, you know, it's a good license to be villainous with those credentials.
I mean, are there roles at this point in your career that you want to seek out? I mean, because I read about Game of Thrones and the way that you were excited about they wanted an actor, and you're like, I'll do that. I always want to be a part of that. Or, you know, even being a part of a Marvel Comics franchise like X-Men. I mean, are there things as in your own life, personal stuff, that you want to seek out to be a part of as an actor?
Yes, I want to play somebody in the Tribune building with headphones and a beard, because I'm unable to grow one, who is quick-witted and sassy and speaks with a Chicago accent. That is what I would like to do next.
The Tribune building got sold, so it'll be different. Yeah, so, I mean, it had to be a period piece at a certain point, right?
Okay, all right. Well, I'm not averse to doing period pieces. I've been in wing collars for many years.
For you, and we've talked about this, I mean, you being a film actor and a television actor, I almost consider that to be first and then stage second, just based on how your career has played out.
Yeah.
Do you approach the craft in a different way? I mean, for you to get on stage in front of the beautiful Lyric Opera, but there's thousands of
3,600
people a night to watch you do Henry Higgins. I mean, do you approach that in a different way than what you do, like, you know, doing a scene with Hugh Jackman and Logan?
I mean, you're just aware of the scale is the only thing that is different. But essentially, I think that it comes down to, do you either believe what you're saying or singing, or you don't? And that, I think, transmits to an audience. In the same way that I don't know whether you can actually teach people to act. You either believe the person in front of you is you believe what they're saying, or you don't. And how that happens, I have no real understanding of that. And every time I hear actors try and explain it, or people try and explain it, it goes into gobbledygook talk to me. It's like artists talking about, you know, the meaning when the obvious joke about abstract expressionist paintings. As they talk about it, I think, I don't want to hear that.
I don't want to get my own impression. You
have a feeling from it, and it's something that you can't, you can intellectualize it, but it sounds instantly pretentious to me. So every time I see anybody where actors are trying to explain how they act or why they act, I literally run for the trees.
But I mean, in your case, I feel like you started your career in film, and that is a different style. I mean, you're talking about, you know, directors yelling cut and trying to get into a moment and play small but also big to what essentially is going to be on a silver screen or, you know, in somebody's living room at a later time. There is something about the stage work that is ultimately different. I mean, it's about an experience in the moment at that time.
Yes.
So do you, as an actor, prefer one or the other? Is there something where you love that those kids all screamed and yelled when Eliza walked out that gives you sort of a feeling?
Adrenaline rush? Because you don't. When you're doing any kind of filming for TV or a movie, you have no response because the crew has to be quiet, because if they're not quiet, you have to redo a scene because there's technical problems. Or an airplane goes over, or whatever. Whereas in the theater, you do have this luxury of going from the beginning of the play to the end. So you do go through the whole life of how that character is written. And that feeling and the response you get from an audience, and it does change from audience to audience, especially as you witnessed this afternoon, where you had this completely different response from a much older audience, which is generally what a theatre audience is, because it's so costly to go for the most part. So that makes it different. Whereas in a movie, by the time you get to see it, a year has gone by and you're sort of trying to remember who you even worked with and how it's cut, or whether you've been cut out of it or added, or whether they've dubbed you or whatever. So you have no control over that. Whereas in the theatre, you are, you know, for better or worse, you are going through the whole experience right there and then with a live audience. And that is exhilarating when it works.
When it works. When, you know,
and when it's bad, it is gruesome. As you know, there is nothing worse than bad theater. It's the most painful thing. Whereas you can sit through any old schlock of a movie, I think. But if it's bad or really mediocre theater, I think that's a tough call.
You know, for you and your career, when you have so many titles to your name, and it's fun to look down and be able to, like I said, see such great films, you know, L.A. Story and others in there that you've done over time. You've done a mix of comedy. You've done a mix of drama. Mm-hmm. You really have diversified your portfolio when it comes to being an actor. Does that help you at the end of the day? I mean, if you would have stayed, I'm just going to do comedy. I'm just going to continue to do comedy and you find yourself doing more movies with Melissa McCarthy, or, you know, I'm just going to do drama and I'm going to be on a fast track for Oscars. Does it help or does it hurt to have so much diversity in your
That biography? Suggests, Justin, that there is a great deal of control about what you do. It's literally, it's a crapshoot. It's much more arbitrary than that. It's literally somebody comes up and says, somebody's either dropped dead or they didn't want to do this or they pulled out. Are you available? Or you were the first choice and they went to somebody else. You have no real control over that other than to say, you know, what I mentioned earlier about Judi Dench's advice. You need to say yes to the job or no to the job. And thereafter,
that's your control.
That's right. The gamble.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I've had actors in before and you know, actors who are on stage and Broadway and other places, mm-hmm. not unlike you, where, you know, we have a conversation about rejection. Because it's a big part of being an actor. And I mean, and I think about it. Here you are on stage or, you know, at the Lyric and you know, performing in front of 3,500 people, or you're on the big screen getting accolades for your work next to Hugh Jackman and Logan.
Mm-hmm.
But I would assume that part of the job that you had to learn at a certain point is how to handle rejection, because not every script goes your way. Not every audition goes your way. Even things that you are in charge, you feel like you did well, don't necessarily come
yeah,
to fruition.
Yeah, that part never stops. And I think that when people have, well, I don't think you can give anybody advice, but when young actors have said to me, you know, you're so old now, what is your advice? And I've just said, get used to having no tattooed invisibly on people's foreheads, because generally that is the word that you hear more than anything. People just say, no, we don't want you, Justin. We want Justin, the younger Justin, the Justin with more hair on top and no beard. We want a thinner Justin. We want a darker Justin. We want an older, you know, it's...
You sound like my parents.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, no, so try to, you can only, you know, you can only do your best in front of what they're asking for. So
is there a time, you know, as an actor in your life, I mean, that you become more comfortable with that or understand the dynamics of that?
Because you understand it. You have to understand it and accept it, because if you don't, you won't psychologically have the wherewithal to survive the amount of rejection that you get. And you never really stop auditioning because... You know, as you mentioned, having been in the played a villain in Logan with Hugh Jackman, that doesn't automatically mean theoretically, oh, well, now I'm going to be offered that part or that part. It just, you know, nothing follows according to what you think it logically should. So, you know, you can have something that 5 years later, somebody says, oh, I heard you on that show, on Justin's show, talking about this, and that gave me an idea for this. Could you come and play this part? And that's as arbitrarily as how things happen, genuinely.
You've had success with Nail and I as well, of having your first film, 1987, 30 mm-hmm. years, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
An anniversary. But that's a movie in which your character and the movie has a cult following, especially in England. Like there's a large cult following. So talk about that dynamic as well, the idea of creating work, creating art, that actually, you know, beyond everything you just mentioned and, you know, how difficult this job can be, actually stays with people, becomes part of their lives.
That's a bonus when something like that happens. And I went to the Music Box, had a 30th anniversary screening of it a couple of weeks ago, which I went to. And I was astonished, having never been to Chicago before. You can imagine if you come from another continent and you arrive here and a packed cinema and people laughing and having seen a movie that you had made 30 years ago that you've, you know, it's almost forgotten in your head, that they know all the dialogue from and they quote from, and then they ask very informed questions at the end of it when you do the live Q&A. That is very odd, because it's something that obviously with any cult thing, and I know from being a fan of movies and of particular performances, you can remember every detail, and
yeah.
And then I've met the people that have played them. I remember meeting Peter O'Toole and asking about Lawrence of Arabia, and he looked at me like I was sort of mentally retarded, like, why are you talking about that? It's like 100 years ago, you can't even remember it. But, you know, in my mind, he is forever that. So I think there is an element of, and I've spoken to Tim Curry about this as well, from his iconic role in playing Frankfurter in the yeah. Rocky Horror Picture Show, yeah. is that at some level, people who are obsessed with one particular role in a movie that you've been in never quite forgive you for not playing that for the rest of yeah. your career or being that person in real life. Yeah. Now, I played an out-of-work, drug-addicted, alcoholic actor. I'm allergic to alcohol. And I, you know, since that movie came out 30 years ago, I've essentially been pretty much in work ever since. So the irony of that has not escaped me whatsoever. So I'm very grateful to it.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. Richard E. Grant, the great award-winning actor, is in town playing Professor Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady at the Lyric, running through May 21st. We just saw you on the screen as Dr. Xander Rice in the X-Men franchise, the movie Logan. Richard, thanks so much for coming in and being my guest.
Thank you,
really
Justin.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.